Welcome back, everybody, to the 6 Yard Box podcast, the official podcast of the Juventus Official Fan Club of Toronto. This is episode 14, brought to you by our friends at Creative. That's K-R-E-8-I-V.ca. For all your web design, branding, and logo needs, you can visit them online and social media at K-R-E-8-I-V. Thanks again to the fine folks there at Creative. Welcome again, everybody. This is a special show we haven't recorded in a little over a month. First recording since the end of the 2020-21 season. This is going to be a fully packed show. We'll talk Juve, obviously, but we definitely got to bring in that talk with the Euros. And today I'm very happy to welcome back our guest on this show, our club ambassador and a good friend of ours, DJ Danny D from Z103.5. Thanks so much again for being on here, Danny.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you guys. And Forza Juve, Forza Italia.
Hey, yeah, we're going to be saying a lot of that on this show. And as always, I'm joined by our club president, John Groh, and our board member, James Martino. For those that don't know me, I am vice president of the club, Joe Chiracco, and host of this podcast. So before we get to Italy and to the Euros, we've got a lot to talk about, guys. Danny, we haven't had you since last fall when we were just starting the season. A lot of optimism back then, and it was a topsy-turvy season, very much like, you know, our society that we've had to go through over the last 10 months, specifically since last October. But, you know, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, slowly but surely, and it's coinciding right with the end of the soccer season and the beginning of the Euros. But I just want to get your thoughts as a huge Juventino, Danny. And I know you're repping Italia here for those watching us on YouTube. But what are some of your thoughts on what's been quite a hell of a season for Juve? A lot of mixed emotions. Want to get, as a huge fan, just want to get your thoughts on how it all went down.
Well, I want to go back to our podcast. I think it was like end of November, beginning of December, if I'm correct. And, you know, I had my doubts about Pirlo, and I don't want to blame the season on him because it was certainly not his fault. You know, I think Pirlo is going to make an excellent coach. The two points that I made back then, and I still believe, was one, throwing him into the fire like that, like his first job being manager of Juventus. Like, let's be honest, you look at coaches like Pippo Inzaghi, he got thrown into Milan. I mean, albeit he had a little bit of time with the youth sector, which Pirlo didn't have. He had like a week. But he had to go down to Serie B to get some experience to come back up, and he brought Benevento up. I know they got relegated, but I mean, let's be honest, you know, at least he's kind of formed himself as a manager and he's created an identity. And Pirlo didn't have that time. And also, I'm not a fan of coaches coaching their former teammates. Antonio Conte, you know, when he did it, I know he played with Buffon, but I mean, it was kind of like the tail end. It, like Pirlo, Bonucci, Chiellini, Buffon, like we're talking that, you know, these guys go back like, you know, years with the national team and Juve. And I don't know. I feel like towards the end there, he lost the dressing room. I don't know what it was, who exactly it was. I'm not going to blame it on like those players specifically. But then the last like three games, he somehow made it happen. And, you know, luckily we made it to champions, because I'm not going to lie, that that last day of the season, I had some issues.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was a hell of a finish. For those that, you know, don't follow Juve, we did make the top four on the very last day with some help from Verona. Thank you, Hellas Verona. And we did win the Coppa Italia. So, you know, two trophies and a fourth place finish for a coach like Pirlo that had zero experience coming in. Not bad. We're going to get to Juve towards the end, a little later on in the show. But I actually had forgotten to hand it over to John right at the top of the show. So apologies for that, Mr. President. But we have some pretty big announcements coming as part of our club. So without further ado, John, before we forget, take it away, because this is some really exciting stuff.
Yeah, big announcement. Inter loses the Scudetto. No, I'm joking. I wish I wasn't, but welcome, everyone. The great thing is we're obviously all excited about heading into a different stage and hopefully putting COVID behind us. And with that, we have a packed, action-packed summer ahead of us. We have our June 27th, our soccer footy golf event at North of the City in Newmarket Cardinal Golf Course at the Kettle Creek Course. There's still spots available. They're filling up fast, but there's still spots. Teams of five. We're looking to get people to have five so we can obviously make everyone comfortable with their teams. There's a 10-minute time period per each team coming in. With that, it includes your membership for next year, includes a Juventus official soccer ball with a bag, some other swag, lunch is included, and you get to see my smiley face there. So with that, we also have our picnic coming up on July the 25th at Boyd Park. We're going to be right along Islington. Come find us, come there. We'll be obviously selling memberships as well at the event. We also have our corn roast at the end of the summer. But in between, we actually have a pretty cool, prize availability. And that is we're raffling off a Vespa. A custom 2020 Notte Edition Vespa brought to with the support of the fan club and also Toronto West Vespa. And in the next week, a great contest with Z103.5 at obviously the Drive at Five, giving away merch and a membership for 3 weeks. Danny and the crew over at the radio station will be promoting the Euros, Juventus, and hopefully bring back an Azzurri Blue win at the end of the competition. So we're really excited about this next year. We're hoping, obviously, with the changes and everything that's happening and the positivity and the great news of numbers going down for COVID, that sooner rather than later, we'll be able to have watch parties and be able to get together and cheer on our favorite black and white for the upcoming season.
Yeah, great. Thanks, John. And we can't wait to be part of that contest with Z103.5 with DJ Danny D at the Ultra Drive at 5. Free prizes include a scarf, free membership, and a couple of gift cards as well. So be sure to tune in starting next week on the 14th of June. So, you know, one of the reasons why we had this contest is, and just in general, why so many other places of business are having, contests and similar things with patios and restaurants opening up. It's another year, another international tournament after we had the Euro 2020 postponed. And it is going to be Euro 2020, everybody. It's not Euro 2021. I've already had people say that it isn't. UEFA is honoring last year's tournament, one, because it's too expensive to change all the branding. But more importantly, they want to honor the tournament as it was before COVID. So 1 year later, same cities, very different. So for those that don't know or, you know, follow the sport every 3 or 4 years, this year we've got a pan-European tournament. So it's going to be in 11 cities across Europe with 24 teams. Italy is in Group A, and they're actually kicking off the tournament this Friday, 3 p.m. against Turkey, one of the dark horses of the tournament. We're going to get into them really quickly. James, I'll start off with you. We're going to talk, you know, Italy mostly, but we're going to go through the other groups. But since Italy starting in Group A, we'll start off with that Group A, which includes Turkey, Italy, of course, Wales, and Switzerland. Switzerland and Wales are going to play on Saturday morning. James, your thoughts on Italy formation? What kind of lineup can we expect on Friday against Turkey in Rome at the Stadio Olimpico?
Yeah, so Mancini has stuck with a 4-3-3 throughout the qualifying. I expect pretty much the same. The combination is going to be, I see either one of either Chiellini or Bonucci as a center back. And then it could be both of them. It could be just one or the other. The midfield that Juve would have died for with Barella. You also have Locatelli on there. I don't actually think Locatelli will start. You have Verratti and another solid, now his name escapes me from Chelsea. I forget his name off the top of my head. Jorginho. Jorginho is going to be the one who is going to be dictating that play as the center midfield. And then you'll have Barella just attacking box to box, and he's a fantastic, I hate to say it because he plays for Inter, But he's a fantastic midfielder and he's one of the players to watch as a breakout for this tournament. And then up top, either you'll see a Mobile in the center, and Nzengye will probably start the tournament, but I see him by the end of the tournament not starting. And that's where our boy Federico Chiesa, Freddie Church, will step in and put on a show for us and make us Juventini proud.
Yeah. Danny D, what are your thoughts on Italy? We're looking pretty good. Yeah, same question, really.
I think they're hungry, especially having missed out on 2018 World Cup. Mancini's got them playing his style of football. I've never really been a big Mancini fan, but you know what? He has proven in his career that he can get some results. Like, I mean, you know, he won the Premier League with Manchester City. So I think, you know, he's the right coach for the right time. I don't want to just, you know, I want to bring my expectations down to earth because I just don't like to think the best and then all of a sudden, you know, the worst happens. So I just want to be realistic. This is a team that's, you know, entering an international competition, you know, after 4 years of absence, right? And I think that, you know, there's still some work to be done. I don't think sending Moise Kean back was a good move. I'm really not sold on the number nine for Italy. Like Belotti, Immobile, they just don't do it for me. I don't know. And that's something that, you know, I think Moise Kean, especially the season he had with PSG, I think he could have flourished. On the wings, like James said, we got, you know, Chiesa, we have Insigne, you know, a lot of people write off Bernadeschi, but Bernadeschi flourishes in Mancini's system. He's always played well. The defense is the defense, you know, it's always Italy's strong point. Like James says, Jorginho is going to be the man pulling the strings in the midfield. I might see Locatelli though, even playing on the left-hand side. I don't know necessarily know about starting, but I think he could have an impactful tournament. He's definitely got something to prove, especially with the transfer rumors surrounding him this summer. And of course, Donnarumma in the back. Again, we'll get that more later, but hopefully transfer rumors come true with him too as well, although they've cooled off the last few days. But, you know, he's one of the best shot stoppers in the world right now.
Yeah, and John, I'll ask you the same question, and I know you're wearing your Roberto Baggio 94 jersey, so we don't really have anybody that talented on this squad, but we have a pretty decent side.
Isn't the lineup him and Massaro with Pagliuca and Net? Isn't that what we're talking about right now? only, I don't know about Pagliuca, but I would take Massaro and Baggio up front right now, or even a Signori, to be very honest with you. I know Mancini loves a 4-3-3, and he's really passionate about that. I don't know how long we're going to be in that formation. I agree with James. The first game of any competition seems to be they call it the tormentone, our Achilles heel. And we always are like waiting to see like whether or not, you know, we can swim, but we don't want to go in the water and start paddling. It's like, we forget, we freeze. I'm going to say that I think by the tournament's mid or whatever the mid is, by the second or third game, I can see him going to a modified 4-3-1-2. I don't see him playing with a heavy on the wings. I agree that I think he may be playing Locatelli after he sees. I don't think Insigne's got the stamina nor the wherewithal against some of these strong boys up front, especially Turkey. These guys are bulls. He's going to really have to rely on his form prior to the last couple of games of the season to do something. I'm not sold on him as Danny said. I'm not sold on Belotti either. I think that I agree with Bernardeschi being a little bit used more, but I actually think that Berardi will have more of an impact than a Belotti on the field. Immobile, let's see if he can get out of his, whatever slump he is in terms of big occasions, especially for Italy. We need him to be on and hit the net. I find that he gets 20 chances and he converts on one, and that one is typically a penalty shot. We don't need that. We need someone to really pop in the goals. And I am a little bit concerned with Donnarumma, to be very honest with you, with respect to his ability of judging balls. He showed it at the end of the season, even against Cagliari. He came out looking like he was blind. I don't know what he was searching for, but that's my concern. Bonucci, Chiellini, it's really about their health. Jorginho, for me, I mean, if anybody's going to bring in, and he's got to be our nucleus. He's come off probably one of the best Champions League finals that I've liked in the last little while, outside of, you know, watching Bayern last year. I thought they played a masterclass against Man City, and he was a big part of that. And we really need his confidence to come in here and really, like, transmit into the rest of the players to – and I'm looking at him as much as Chiellini's the captain, I'm looking at him for the pseudo captain of the team, and really taking the bull by the horns, because he's got all the qualities for us. And we talk about breakouts. I agree, Barella is going to be with him. I'm a little bit worried about his temper. I think that Jorginho is really going to step it up a notch for Italy. And I think it's just that progression from the CL final.
Yeah, great points. I think. And here, I'll give my thoughts. I think for the first time in 123 years, we can say with confidence that the best part of this team, the strongest part of this team, is the midfield, which we were never really able to say, really ever, just because historically, Italy has always had great defenders, but also a lot of talented forward players. You go back, 100 years to Raimundo Orsi, Giuseppe Meazza in the 30s, winning World Cups. The Mazzolas, Riveras in the 60s. That one Euro 68, the only European Cup, was won with a very good team back in the day with Pietro Anastasi, who was playing, who just joined Juve, I think that summer, the year after in 68, and that solid foundation in 1970, had a couple of number 10s. That 82 team, Tardelli, was a rock back there. And they had a couple of other decent guys. But, you've got guys like Jorginho, who just won the Champions League. He's the most informed, player that we have. Was Champions League team of the tournament. Verratti made the Champions League final last year. Played a lot of big games with PSG. If he can stay healthy and not get red cards, I think he'll be another key player. One thing I'm looking for is the speed of the players, not just in defense, but also mid. I'm pretty concerned, I'm not going to lie, with Bonucci and Chiellini, not so much at the beginning, but in transition defense. Can they keep up with some of these teams, with some counterattacking teams, especially in game one against Turkey, who they play a very counterattacking style and they're very fast players? Can they be able to keep up? Can they stay healthy? Can they stay disciplined? No yellows or reds, because the lack of speed. Yeah, you're going to see mistakes happen, especially when there hasn't been an international tournament in 3 years. There's bound to be mistakes. I just hope it's not going to be one of our mistakes. And I think even Mancini's been guilty a little bit of having the players, especially during the qualifiers, play a little bit slow passing. There's a lot of passing and there's a lot of technical ability in this team, but at some point, they're going to pick you apart, take the ball off you, and run downfield. And as good as Jorginho, Verratti, and Barella are, really, Barella is the only true box-to-box midfielder that we have. The rest are very technically gifted, but not as great defensively as him. So that's one area that we have to focus on as well. Fullbacks, historically, was a weakness, but if they can stay healthy, I think Spinazzola on the left, Florenzi on the right will give you enough coverage, but also be able to chip in offensively, because we're going to need a lot of help offensively. With Immobile and Belotti, that's another area of concern where I don't know if I'm hope I'm wrong, but I don't know if they're going to give us the goals that we're going to need to overtake some of these teams. It's been a concern for the last 15 years, really, since Luca Toni retired. Who's going to be that number nine to carry the team? We thought it was Balotelli in 2012. Great tournament. We all know what happened to him after that. Now we have, a guy, Belotti, who's severely underachieved for the national team. Immobile, who's been scoring, five straight years with 20 goals. Golden boot winner last year. but he's only got 13 goals in 46 games for the Azzurri. That's not good. That's not very good at all. Belotti, like John mentioned, he gets his penalties. And if this is a penalty shootout between Belotti and Insigne and Immobile, I think we're going to go 5-for-5. I'm confident there. And Donnarumma is a great keeper. But are we going to get to the 120th minute? You know, that's the issue. And hopefully we don't have to go through penalties, because God, Lord knows, it can only take so much, especially with Italy's record. Although Euro 2000, we all remember that great memory with Francesco Toldo pulling off probably one of the greatest goalkeeping performances of all time. So again, this is a team that, like, for the first time ever, I think, at least as far as I can remember watching the game for 20 years, this is the first time where Italy's actually confident in going into a tournament, whereas there was always some kind of tension or they barely qualified for the tournament, but that has not been the case. We have been unbeaten in 27 straight games. We only tied like two of those games. It's been like 25 wins and two draws. So this has never been happening before in Italy. And I know the competition hasn't been the greatest. You know, you got Lithuania, Bulgaria, Finland in the qualifying group, but you can only beat the people, the teams ahead of you, like that you're faced with. And the fact that we're actually blowing out teams 4-0, where in the past we would tie 1-1 with Lithuania, and we have a couple times, or one barely 1-0 against, you know, lower teams, like we're beating them convincingly, and that's a good sign. And I think there's a genuine attractiveness to being a fan of the Italy team for the first time in decades. Mancini has brought a new spirit, and he's going to be the coach for the next 5 years. That's important, because you've always had a guy come in for 2 years. Conte did a good job 5 years ago. Giampiero Ventura came in, and, you know, let's not speak of that moment ever again. So I think it's important. A lot of people are not going to understand the impact of having a coach for several tournaments in a row. You see France, when Deschamps came in 2012, the success that he had with that group, it's because he's been there for a long time. Yogi Löw on Germany, yeah, he overstayed his welcome. But for, you know, between 2006 and 2014, they were in the semifinals and finals for most of those tournaments. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic with this team. But like Danny D said, let's temper our expectations a little bit. I think Italy's a serious dark horse and a serious contender. I think the semifinals are more than reasonable. That's my prediction. So I'll hand it over to you guys. Danny, I'll start with you this time. What do you think? How far do you think this Italy team can go? Based on your assessment?
You know what? I think you nailed it. Like I was saying at the beginning, like they're hungry going into the tournament, especially missing out of the the 2018 World Cup. There's something about this team. Like there's an aura about them that they're clicking right now. And I have to give that to Mancini. He has them clicking. Like there's a certain feeling between them, and there's a belief. I think semifinals is a reasonable expectation. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the final, to be honest with you. I think they have it. But again, it's all about who performs, who stays healthy, who's disciplined, like you said, and, you know, who doesn't make, the Pavaras or the, and I don't mean that just for Donnarumma. I mean that, like, just in general, like, who's going to make those blatant errors that, you know, you just can't make on that stage.
Yeah. James. Semis, final, are we taking it all?
So I think this tournament is the coming out party. It's the World Cup, which will be the real contender show. And Danny already mentioned Keane was left home. I think that was more of a tactical decision. But the person that, you know, arguably the best national team player, Zaniolo, is still coming off an injury. So that's why I think we're here. Keep us in mind for the World Cup. Looking at the brackets, the breakdown of the groups, I think the other wild card is there's four third place teams that go through. And that's another wild card, because when you look at, I believe it's Group F, where you have Portugal, Germany, and last team, excuse me there. Portugal, Germany, and
Hungary.
France and Hungary. In prior tournaments, one of those big guys would be out and would be considered a group of death. But now with this, all three basically will advance. All three are going to get 3 points against Hungary. And that 3 points should be enough to get you into the next round. So that's the wild card. But when I did my bracket, I see Italy making its way comfortably to the semifinals, where they would most likely meet France. And I think they'll put up a good show, but that will be it. That French team is just stacked. You have, while we're talking about Jorginho, we have Conte, who is arguably the best player on that field that day for the Champions League final.
Yeah. And John, I'm going to turn it over to you on but ask a different question. We've got Turkey, Wales, and Switzerland in our group. Who do you think would be the toughest challenge there? And your prediction on where we're going to finish in our group. And then based on that, do you see us making it that far? Like, you know, we've all agreed, at least the three of us so far, that we'll pretty much go deep. Is that a consensus for you as well?
Well, it's always the first game. It sets the stage and it sets the psychological state of the team. Like, you go down, you tie that first game, it's now the mind trick starts playing. We got to come out hard. The Turkish team, the Turks, come out and they're a tough team. These guys are physical. They're man marking geniuses. They've come to this Euro Cup. They're not a bad team. You know, we already know one of them that's on that team. It's Mehdi Demiral. He's one of our own. And he'll be marshaling that back line, and he'll know a few things of the players on there. And these guys are going to come out hungry. It's in their nature. I'm not Wales. I honestly, you got an aging group there with Gareth Bale and co. We have Ramsey, who's one of ours, made of glass type of thing. I think the Swiss are the ones that are going to be the ones that are technically going to give us more of a challenge and know more of our game. Honestly, I didn't mention him before, but you know, I know that James brought him up, and in terms of him not being there, like I only wish we had having Zaniolo on our team would give us a dimension that I honestly think we could. That would have been the cherry on top for me. But I think that really the players that have to play, and again, I really like to see Mancini kind of step away from his 4-3-3. I think that Chiesa is going to be pivotal. I don't think that, again, we have to go, we have to be, I'm going to say minimum quarterfinals, best case scenario, semifinals. I think it's France, England, and Portugal that are going to fight it out for the title. That's my prediction. I think that, you know, the French, I mean, you know, just N'Golo Kanté, you got Pogba, you know, you have guys up front. Benzema's back on the team. The guys just had a marvelous season with Real. And you have Deschamps. You talk about coaching. The guy knows them. They all love him. He's not a Dominic, obviously, type of coach. So he's got his team playing well. It really is. We're going to have to play. And one thing is for sure, for once, and I know they're aging, that we're strong right down the middle. Even if we put Immobile in the center, if you go to center forward, center mid, center D, when's the last time you could actually say that Italy had all three at the same time that you can consider to be safe and consistent? It's been a while.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually can't remember. I think you're right, John. I think this is very much, we have the depth and we'll see how it goes. And I know you mentioned a couple of contenders. That's right. Great segue into our next topic on the rest of the competition, because it's not all about Italy. I mean, sure it is for most of the time, but you know, there are other teams out there. The world doesn't revolve around Italy as much as, you know, we'd like to think it does, but just for those unaware, there's three scenarios for Italy. If they win the group, they're going to be playing the runner-up of Group C. And Group C includes Netherlands, Ukraine, Austria, North Macedonia. Most likely, it will likely be Ukraine, who is another dark horse and another team that has some great young players, very similar to Turkey, coached by Andriy Shevchenko, which we remember after his many years playing in Serie A. The Netherlands, if they slip, which is possible, considering Matthijs de Ligt is not 100% right now. We know that Van Dijk is not going to be playing this tournament. They're very short on options up front. So there could be a situation where we might see Italy, Holland in the round of 16. It's very much possible. Now, if Italy finishes runner-up, they're going to face the runner-up of Group B, which is going to be Belgium's group, along with Russia and Denmark. Most likely that would be Denmark, who's also a team that, you know, historically Italy has not done that well against Scandinavian teams. You know, we all know the Biscotto in 2004, another painful memory for us. There's a lot of those down the years, but that's one scenario. And then the unlikely scenario is if they finish third in the group, they'll actually be playing, I believe, in the top of the bracket against another big team, I think England or Spain, on the other side of the bracket, possibly even France. So that's one area we don't want to stay in, definitely don't want to be in. You know, you mentioned, John, the group of death. That's going to be, man, for the neutral, man, what a group. Germany, France, you got the world champions, the defending Euro champions, and then Germany, the most successful team at this tournament historically. So that's, and Hungary, which is a very good young team. Danny D, I'm going to toss it over to you. John mentioned his contenders. Do you agree with that kind of assessment? Is it going to be France, Portugal, even England, Belgium? Who do you think is going to be on? Obviously, we hope it's the Azzurri, but who do you think has the best shot at winning this?
I'll be honest with you. I don't think France is taking it. It's very difficult to see a team repeat back-to-back on the international stage. You know, I don't disagree that they are stacked, and not just stacked, but you're talking like 2 to 3 players deep in some positions that, you know, they make any team jealous. But the only thing I'm thinking that Holland has something to prove too. I know they're not 100% healthy with De Ligt, and of course with him and Van Dijk at the back, that would be a completely different story. But I just think that they're a team that has something to prove after missing so many tournaments recently. Spain, you can never write them off, but I don't see them going far. You know, if I had to pick a Final Four, like off the top of my head, I can't go with the brackets, like how they're going to fall. But I could see like Italy, Holland, France, maybe a Portugal in there. And James made another excellent point about the third place team going through. Let's not forget, Portugal won the Euro last time, finished third in their group, like you know, and what was it, by like a goal that they made it through or something? It was like 1982 Italy all over again. So you can never, that third place team can never be discounted, that, you know, they're going to be like written off in the knockouts as soon as, like, in the first round of the knockouts. So it's going to be interesting, but I don't see France taking it all, and I definitely don't see Germany going far in this one.
And James, what are your thoughts? I think we have all these contenders, whether it's Ronaldo or Adrian Rabiot, there's at least one Juventus player playing on all these big teams, which is a testament to our team being one of the tops in the world. Which one of our players on the Bianconeri you think is going to come out on top in this tournament?
Well, I pick France, so Rabiot is going to be get a good view from the bench of maybe a World Cup. You also have a big tournament that De Ligt is going to be a big key for. And that's the one thing that's kind of surprising to me when you're reading these previews and they're calling out breakout players for every country, and nobody is saying anything about De Ligt. So I think that's a little bit of lack of respect to our big boy. He may come out and prove us wrong, have some stellar performances. You know, Chiesa is going to be fantastic. Ramsey, I think he is, you know, hopefully he does well enough that can get us some interest in the EPL, that we can get some value for him. The team, even though they're not Juventus City related, is Belgium. This is their golden era. This is their last kick in the can. So you have a group with the Hazard brothers, you have Lukaku, who's coming off his best season ever. it's their time now. So if they don't put it together for this year or next year's World Cup, they've missed the golden opportunity.
Yeah, and just a final thought on this tournament as a whole. So it's not going to be like in years past. There's still capacity limits in all the stadiums, except in Hungary, which they're going to have a full house for their home games, which is going to be pretty cool to see. But, 21,000, 25% capacity at the Stadio Olimpico for the three group stage games. Even the final at Wembley will probably, COVID pending, have about half of Wembley, so about 50,000 people. And again, COVID is still a specter that looms really large on this tournament. We had Kulusevski got COVID. Another player in Sweden, Alexander Isak, who's one of the top young players in the world, also tested positive. So they're going to miss 2 weeks. And those are the two best players on the team, especially with Ibrahimovic, who couldn't make the tournament when he injured his knee against us last month. Sergi Busquets out with COVID. So I hope this tournament, as excited as we are, I just hope this tournament doesn't get canceled, because if there's an outbreak in a team, I mean, you're disqualified. Even though you have an extra couple players, you're allowed to have 26 players on your roster. I just don't see a case if three or four players get COVID, how they would be able to play on the pitch. So I'm really hoping that nothing, serious happens. I know vaccination rates in Europe are pretty high, but nothing is guaranteed at this point. And no one has really explained what's going to happen if that situation arises. I mean, we have the Copa America at the time of recording. They're actually meeting in Brazil to see whether or not they're actually going to take the tournament, have the tournament on Thursday, 3 days before the first game is supposed to start. And it was supposed to be in Colombia and Argentina, and for various reasons, political turmoil and COVID itself, they're not hosting it. Brazil got it, but they're one of the worst hit countries still in the world. So, it's easy to forget with all the excitement going, but let's just hope this tournament can go on. And, it's just, I miss this kind of, the Champions League and the regular domestic leagues are never going to be matched quality for quality, but there's just something really special about those international tournaments, like those memories that flood through. And actually, before we get on to Juve, I can't just leave it off this topic. I want to ask all three of you guys what your favorite memories are of the Azzurri. I'll start briefly with mine. Like I mentioned off the top, been watching as a little kid for the last 20 years that I can actually remember. 2006 semifinal against Germany. Best game I ever saw, because it was the only really game where Italy took it to their opponent. And it was an end-to-end game, 0-0 until the very end. We all know the Grosso goal, the Del Piero goal to seal it. Something I'll never forget watching with my family. It's my favorite game of all time. John, how about you? What's your favorite Azzurri memory? I'm guessing it's Roberto Baggio, since you got his Diadora shoes and his jersey.
there's moments across the board, and I mean, there's you bring up 2006. I think it's a culmination. There's events in each specific that are special. You talk about the Italy in 94, actually 1990, that was supposed to win it all. And I don't know if you guys, how old you guys, I know, maybe me and Danny.
It was before my time, for
election,
sure.
Than the rest of you guys. But I was 13 and I was watching that team, and you see the likes of a young Maldini play and a Baresi and Ancelotti marshalling thing with guys like Berti and Giannini and Donadoni, and I'm saying names that probably some of our viewers are like, who, what, and our beloved commissario tecnico, our coach Mancini, on the bench waiting to come on with the Vialli and Schillaci and a Baggio coming on. But there's 90, there's 94, the comeback, and then Baggio just tearing it up from the quarters against Nigerians. And then, you look at key moments, 2000 in the Euro against the Dutch, where we were down a man with Zambrotta's red card and they stuck it out. And they just, that was probably one of the, like, you want to talk about survival, just the legends that were on that field to win that game at that time was just, you talk Maldini, Nesta, Toldo and Ned, Del Piero, Totti, Pesotto. I mean, it was just a team that kept it together. And, you know, 2006 was just the climax. And we really haven't seen anything that is romantic about our team that we can actually say that, you know, you look at that final loss against Spain in the Euro on Canada Day. And when was that? That wasn't 2012. When was that?
Yeah, 2012.
That I honestly, I wanted to smash my TV that day. It was, you know, I had Canada flags and Italy flags up on Canada Day, and our team failed to show up at all on that day. But, you know, I think it's a culmination of events, and I think we all have, you know, our moments. I guess the older ones have, I guess myself, but just being able to just go back. But I'm be honest with you, I think I'm going to have to go back to the Netherlands, Italy semifinal in the Euro, because I mean, that team was just, and we lost to France. That was our Euro. That was our Euro to, like, no one was better than us that year. No one.
Yeah. A lot of regrets there. But what a team. I mean, like, you can Google this for those that are too young to remember, but even as a 7-year-old kid, like, the talent was just unbelievable. Like, that back line, it's just crazy to think.
Cannavaro and Samaldini. That's all, yeah, I have to,
I mean,
say.
Like, how can you get through that? Like, honestly, James, your favorite memory of the Azzurri?
Well, just because we're on that subject, it was also the best kick. Those Kappa kits were, those are my favorite. No offense to Nike and Puma now, but those were the best. My favorite memory is actually the same as yours, Joe. It was Del Piero in the semifinal 2006, where he gets that drop pass and just buries it back, buries it in the corner, runs around the net, tongue out. They show the poor German girl in tears, and Del Piero's got his tongue out, and he's doing the welcome to the jungle salutes to everybody and all his critics, and that led to the great moment in the final. But another memory, because I was actually talking with my dad and just saying, my first soccer memory is World Cup 90. And that was Galacci coming off the bench in the opener and scoring the header late in the game and winning it for us. So I actually still have last year, my mom was going through my stuff. My shirt from St. Clair, Galacci shirt, World Cup 90, Galacci in the back. I still have it. So that's a special memory as well.
Yeah, and who can forget the mascot, the Chow mascot with the, it was like a Lego with the soccer ball head. I mean, that's an iconic World Cup mascot, I think, that really characterizes the Italia 90. And Danny, I'll leave it off with you, our guest. I'm sure there's tons of memories, especially you being in your industry. But if you could narrow down to one, what would it be?
Well, if you don't mind, I'm just going to highlight a couple first.
Go for it.
Euro 2016, you know, midfield is decimated by injuries. No Marchisio, no Verratti. And that first game against Belgium, like, we took it to them. We had the BBC was, like, on another level that game. And probably the reason why we won that first game. And I don't think anyone expected the Azzurri to pull that off, especially being decimated by injuries. The Euro 2012 is another one, just because of that Cassano-Balotelli partnership. Nobody expected them to do what they did against Germany in the semifinal. And I just still remember vividly that those two goals from Balotelli were just incredible. But if you have to ask me my number one, and it's not just because they won the World Cup, it's the 2006. Like John had said, that first game is pivotal for the team. They came out, they won against Ghana. And, you know, sadly, Italy has a history of tying that first game. And, you know, they didn't that tournament, and they tied against the United States. Then they took it to the Czechs, who back then still had Nedved playing. He was on his final tournament of his career, but Czechs were never a pushover. Then we can obviously never forget, you know, the drama against Australia with 10 men and Totti with the penalty. And then obviously the semifinal against Germany. I was DJing during the drive of five, like DJing and one eye on the screen, and it was crazy. But the thing about that team that really sticks out is you look at, you had Cannavaro was obviously leading the back line, but you know, Materazzi only came in because Nesta got injured. And look at, I mean, we don't need to say the story about Materazzi and the tournament he had. You know, and then you have players that were interchangeable up top. Like, I mean, obviously Luca Toni led the line, but you know, and you had Pirlo pulling the strings in the midfield. You had Gattuso, who was just like a bull in that midfield, like shutting everybody down. That team had something that I haven't seen in years. And I'm hoping that chemistry that Italy has right now going into this tournament can replicate itself.
Yeah, no, great points. I think we will. And I think there's going to be a lot of our friends and colleagues who are Italian Canadian are not going to recognize a lot of names on this team. There's a lot of young players here that like they're going to be in their prime when we get the World Cup in 5 years. So it's really exciting to be a fan of the Azzurri, and, you know, Forza Italia, and to all our Juventus players playing in the Euro and the Copa America, hopefully good luck to them. We have, if I recall, we're actually like, I think the team with the third most internationals playing at these tournaments in the world behind, I think, Man City and Barca. I mean, you know, Juve is in a very good position globally in terms of star power. And Serie A as well. The third most players playing in the Euros is from Serie A behind the Premier League and Bundesliga. So, you know, it's a good sign for calcio in general. But on that topic of Juve, like, as we still have to cheer for our club team after July 11th. You know, big news, obviously, Max Allegri rejoining, apparently a changed man who's spent a couple of years away. John, I'll start with you on this one. Did you like the move of bringing back Max? Were there any other candidates that you wish you could have had, or do you think this is the right move?
I think it's a right move. We're not Agnelli. We're not. That's his business. That's his club. He can do what he wants. It's like anything else. Who am I as a fan? I can say I never wanted Mad Max to leave. I was always a big fan. You know, I'm sorry to say, but Italian soccer as a whole hasn't been pretty to watch for a very long time. Doesn't matter what team. We always, you know, it wasn't definitely the 2014, 2015 team that we had that we watched this year. That team was a diamond, to be very honest. That was my favorite team. I think having Max, and depending on what he has changed about himself, I hope not too much. I hope he's ready to still yell, scream, and put people in their place, because I think that's what we missed this year. That's to no fault of Pirlo. That's just not in his DNA. That's not his makeup. And, you know, you watch certain coaches, how they handle themselves. I look at someone like, Spalletti, for instance, not a very animated person on the sidelines. The guy is, he's very reserved. I think that in order to be the best, you got to push the best, and you got to move. I think that Allegri has a mentality. He has a vision for the team. No disrespect to Pirlo. I don't think there was a vision. I think that, tiki-taka PS5 formation and play is fine exactly where it belongs on PlayStation. In order to play a game where you want to have possession ball, you have to have possession players, which we didn't have. And possession ball also requires a down the middle a control, which we didn't have as a team. We were a flank team. People knew what we were doing. And the transfer market is going to be imperative to see what Max would like to play. He's got his idea. I just heard today that he's got only two untouchables, from what they say, and that's Cuadrado and Chiesa are his only two untouchables on his team when he met with management. Whether that's true or not, you know, I can see why he said that. I'm hoping for bigger years from guys like Kulusevski, because he came on strong at the end of the year, but he was gone for pretty much three quarters but Max is going to have to prove himself. It's going to look, he's going to be under thing three coaches in 3 years. Hasn't happened with Juve in how long, you know, and going back. So people could say, what are we back to a reset? Was it, they didn't download properly, whatever software we were looking for to create this, this proper team. I think that a lot of fans will be angry at the fact that they, you know, they were hoping for this, tiki-taka soccer that, you know, was popular in Spain with the Reals and the Barcas. You know, it hasn't happened. The only true team in Italy that I see that's been playing that type of game is Atalanta. And Gasperini is one hell of a coach, but probably not someone I would think would mesh well with some of your veteran players, guys who are set in their ways. And that's really where I think Allegri getting back to the full circle, where Allegri has, he imposes himself. He's got presence. So that's the one positive I can take from all this, is that he takes no bull from anybody. And that is a Lippi-like quality. Marcello Lippi was the exact same way. You have to have presence and you have to own your players.
Yeah, absolutely. James, in terms of transfers, we'll move over to that. And even sticking with the coach and his tactics, do you really see a lot of movement? I mean, realistically, I don't think we're going to be hearing anything concrete until after the Euros. We're definitely not going to know Cristiano's decision until he is either one eliminated or finished playing in the tournament. So, a lot has to rely on him. But in terms of those transfers, what have you been hearing on Twitter, social media, through your network? Anything immediate?
Oh, so nothing immediate. Juve do need to bring in a profit by the 30th. So that is where hopefully Portugal gets out earlier in the tournament, and we can see that Ronaldo movement. With Ronaldo, the selling of him, nothing against him, and he's been fantastic for us. But just looking at him from a financial number, that $60 million gross wages is an albatross to the system. And right now on the books, he is only about $25 million. So anytime, any value over $25 million will be a profit for Juve. I know that their accounting geniuses are looking at potential swaps with the only other three teams that could afford that, which is PSG, United, and Real Madrid. So stay tuned on that. At the end of the day, what we do know is Ronaldo, the team has given Ronaldo the choice. Either he can ask to leave, or they will honor his last year for Juve. So that's the big Ronaldo one. I do see Rabiot. There's rumors that he is going to end up at Tottenham Spurs with Paratic moving over there. There's a couple other Juve players that are of interest in the EPL. Ramsey is one of them. The big rumor that we're hearing, I don't know how much truth is in this one, is Donnarumma to Juve. With that, though, for that to happen, Tech needs to leave. He has a lot of admirers in the EPL. It's a matter of, is anyone willing to eat his current salary? The other shot-in-the-dark rumor that was floated around was Tech to Roma, with Florenzi making his way to Juve in some sort of swap deal for the books, and then that would free up the signing of Donnarumma. So these are the big rumors that are flying out there right now. A lot of it is pie in the sky, because the numbers need to work, especially now with the 30th approaching. What I do see is we're probably going to see a lot of youth players sold. A lot of like no names, and the reason for that is because of the value, the plus valenza phrase that you hear quite often. It's net profit. So selling a youth team player for $1 million means you get $1 million net profit. There's no amortized value on this contract. So I think we're going to see a lot of moves like that happen that really wouldn't affect the roster.
Yeah. And Danny D, just your thoughts, like based on everything we've heard and all the rumor mill going on, like what would you like to see and your thoughts just on this, on what's probably going to be a crazy offseason?
Well, you know, like the appointment of Allegri, I just got to touch on that quickly. That this was handpicked by Agnelli. Let's be honest, that was his choice. I'm not against it, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic. I'm actually going to be optimistic about it, that I see Allegri as one of the best coaches getting the best out of his players. And I think he's always done that, like going all the way back to Milan and Cagliari when he coached them. But my only concern is the second time around is not always as blissful as the first. And we've seen that, like, let's take it back to Lippi when he came back to Juve. I know they went to the Champions League final, but they didn't win it. And let's face it, they want to win it. That's what Juve wants to do. I mean, we want to get back to Scudetto, yes, but we want to win the Champions League. You know, most recently, obviously, with Zidane at Real. And Zidane would have been actually my pick for Juve. I thought he would have brought something, you know, being a former player. I thought he would have brought a new cycle to Juve. But anyways, it is what it is. It's Allegri. But this team needs a revamp. I'm not a finance guy like James pointed out with all the finances. They need to revamp that midfield. I'm sad to see Rabiot go if he does, because I thought he was one of our better midfielders, especially towards the end. But the rumors are he's going to be sold. But if it was me, I would keep Rabiot, McKennie, and the rest of them gone. Agnelli needs to pull out the wallet. He needs to open it up. He has to get Pogba back. Locatelli has to come. The defense, we're okay, because apparently Max wants Chiellini to stay. They want to apparently sell Demiral. I think that's a mistake, because watch the tournament at the Euros. I think he's going to have a good tournament for Turkey. You know, they need to bring a left back. There's talk of Gosens, Palmieri, or Emerson from Chelsea, a couple of names being floated around. But that left back needs some strengthening, unless they try and, you know, bring Pellegrini back from loan and see if he can live up to his promise. And in the attack, I think we're okay, depending on what Ronaldo does. And that's going to also finance some of the other moves like Pogba, etc. But if the rumors are true, Moise Keane needs to come back. He's a Juventino through and through. He just came off a great season with PSG. He is something we can build around. Imagine a team with him and Chiesa moving forward in the future. That's exciting to me. And lastly, Tech needs to go. Yeah, a lot of people are fans of him, and Allegri's a fan of his. He needs to go. We lost a certain amount of points in the Serie A because of him. Like, let's not even bring up that Torino game where he you know, parried the ball into the net. I still remember that was just terrible goalkeeping. And they have to do everything to bring Donnarumma. Like, listen, Donnarumma is not a Buffon. We're blessed with the greatest of all time playing in the Juve colors for years, but he is the best Italian keeper right now, and the best Italian keeper should be playing for Juve.
Yeah, and, you know, unfortunately for, I mean, nothing is set in stone, but, you know, at the time of recording, allegedly, according to rumors with Sky Italia and Gazzetta, Donnarumma will have his medical for PSG this week in Florence at Coverciano. And they're saying it's pretty much a done deal, 12 million after tax per year. Most expensive goalie, highest paid by far. We'll see if that's if that comes to fruition. But, you know, I'm like you guys, I would have loved to see Donnarumma start for Juventus. I mean, historically, it's always been the Italian national team goalie. Most of the time has been on Juve, and I would have liked to see that continue. But, you know, it is what it is. The finances are, you know, with COVID and everything happening and the loss of revenue, it's tough out there, even for a big company like Exor Holding. So remains to be seen. And my final thoughts on Allegri, I mean, I think it's fine. I'm like you, Danny. I would have liked to see Zidane, just because, you know, he's won with Ronaldo and he's won the Champions League, and, you know, he won a lot with as a player and a coach. But I think, you know, when he was on Juve as a player, like, that's when I started watching, you know, Juve and becoming a fan. I just think there's a lot of unfinished business with Zidane with Juve. And I think eventually, I think we'll see that down the line. But, you know, it will be someday in the future. As for Max, you know, he's I like the guy, but he said a lot of things like he's changed as a manager. He's watched a lot of European football and he's being inspired by other leagues and he wants to bring that to Serie A. I will believe it when I see it. Italian football has been declining a lot last 10 years on the pitch. I think commercially in terms of sponsorships and partnerships, they've done pretty well. Stadiums still not great, but slowly improving a little bit, but on the field, man, it's just, especially this year, I don't know if it was the no fans, but it was tough to watch those games week in and week out. And I just hope we can change that because the new generation of Italian kids, the reason why we don't have any prospects is because there's been nothing over the last 15 years to look forward to. You have guys like Giacomo Raspadori who said, oh, my idol growing up was Totò Di Natale. And no disrespect to Antonio Di Natale, but when I was growing up, on our national team, we had Vieri, Del Piero, Totti, and Inzaghi off the bench in 2002, Korea, Japan. Like, that's a whole different class, you know. And I think with this national team, we really need to inspire that next generation of players so that we can maintain ourselves like France, like the Spains, like the Germanys for 10, 15, 20 straight years and no more 2018s ever again. So let's hope, you know, good things happening with Juve and good things with the Azzurri. Again, this is going to be really interesting to see. And that pretty much wraps up for our show. Again, guys, jofctoronto.com for Juventus, everything Juventus Club Toronto. We have the soccer golf. You can go on there on the membership page. You can even have single memberships at $50 a pop. Lots of great things that we're having planned, as John mentioned off the top of the show. Juve Club Toronto on Instagram, at Six Yard Box Pod on Twitter, Six Yard Box Podcast on Instagram, and Juve Club TO on Twitter. I want to thank DJ Danny D again from Z103.5, not only for being there, being a friend of ours and an ambassador for our club, but the knowledge that you bring is terrific. And it's just another touch of class that we love to have here on our show. So thanks so much on behalf of all of us here for coming back.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure and it's an honor to be the ambassador of JFC. And I'm looking forward to big things for Juve, for Italy, and for JFC coming up this year. So Forza Juve, Forza Azzurri.
That's great. And again, thanks to our sponsors, Creative. That's kre8iv.ca. You can visit them for all your web design, server needs, and branding and marketing. As well for John, James, myself, and Danny. Thanks so much for joining us, everybody, on episode 14. Ciao for now, and Forza Azzurri, and fino alla fine, as always, Forza Juventus.